Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, send it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Well, before we get started, I want to let you know today's show is brought to you by the financial support of our listeners. And you can support the show at support.greatdetectives.net. And speaking of that, if you have a series we've not played yet, a detective series that's on our list of shows we're going to do at biglist.greatdetectives.net, email me. We're going to be doing specials where we're going to play three shows that we've not yet played. The exclusions to this are The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, Dragnet, The Saint, and Pursuit, which are all coming along later on this season. Well, coming up later in the show, we will wrap up the very last Carter Brown mystery we have. And now it's time for us to take a listen to part five of The Open Town Matter.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
It's me, Johnny.
Marty?
Yeah, how is he?
All about the same. Dr. Morton just gave him another transfusion.
Has he been able to say anything yet?
He hasn't even been conscious. Why, Marty?
Well, who's there with you?
Joe Crayley and the city attorney.
Look, Johnny, I've got to talk to you right away.
All right, go ahead and talk.
No, not on the phone.
All right, it's room 604, City Hospital. Come on over.
Not with them there. Why don't you come meet me?
Because Shorty Wells is the key to this whole case. If he's able to talk before he dies, I want to be here to listen.
Suppose I tell you I'm ready to talk, Johnny.
Are you telling me?
I'm in an all-night lunchroom right across the street from the hospital. Can you come over here?
All right, Marty. I'll gamble with you. Be there in 5 minutes.
Tonight, and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location Greensport, Missouri. To the Home Office Great Plains Guarantee Company, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment, The Open Town Matter. Expense account, final page. I hung up the phone more puzzled than ever, and heaven knows the case had been puzzling from the start. Marty Blake, young widow of the murdered police chief, had been completely uncooperative and unwilling to talk. And now she was reversing her field. Why? Her house had burned to the ground earlier in the evening, and Shorty Wells, number one on the city attorney's wanted for murder list, had been found trapped in the flames. Maybe this had something to do with Marty's phone call. She'd been my number one suspect at first, since she stood to collect $50,000 as beneficiary of her husband's life insurance. But then the city attorney himself, Dave Sherman, had provided her with an airtight alibi, and I'd reluctantly let her off the hook. Now this. I didn't know what she was up to, and I couldn't afford not to find out.
Something up, Dolly?
Well, that was Marty Blake, Mr. Sherman. She's in a lunchroom across the street. She wants to see me.
Oh, what about?
She didn't say.
Well, go ahead and talk to her if you want to, Johnny. I'll call you if Shorty starts to regain consciousness.
All right, thanks, Joe.
I'm sticking right here myself. This one I'm going to follow personally.
Well, if you really want to break the rackets in this town, your answer is lying right there in that bed, Shorty Wells.
I think you're right, if he's ever able to talk.
And if your police laddies don't fall over their own feet again, the way they did on that gun business when Ed Blake was shot.
That mistake was partly justified, Joe. It was the chief's own gun. It was lying beside his body. It was natural to assume that he'd exchanged shots with the prowler.
Yeah, but 2 days to realize he'd been shot with his own gun.
All right, all right. They fouled up, I admit it.
And the ones who aren't stupid are crooked. Every raid you try to pull has been tipped off.
I know it.
Even when Mayor Lyons brought in state police, the whole plan was tipped.
Which you took great pleasure in pointing out in your news
all
story.
All right, and... you guys, look now. I'll leave you two to settle this. Stick on this guy like a leech. And if he shows any sign of coming to and talking, let me know right away, will you?
Yeah, we're good.
Yeah.
I'll see you later.
Back here in the booth, Johnny.
Right. Well, what's on your mind, Marty?
Sit down, Johnny. Here, come on.
Why not? Well?
The waiter's in back if you'd like some coffee or something.
No, thanks. Okay, now what is it?
What is what?
You had to talk to me right away. How I talk?
Johnny, I'm not... too hard to take, am I?
No. Oh, you're a pink and gold doll. Wild honeysuckle and a handful of stars. At least that's what a couple of guys said today.
I don't care what a couple of guys said. What do you say, Johnny?
I guess the description fits, as far as looks are concerned. And if that's all you want to talk about...
No, no, wait, Johnny. I'm in the clear on this, you know that. The night my husband was killed, I've got an alibi nobody could shake, right?
Well, I'm pretty well convinced you didn't pull the trigger, if that's what you mean.
And you could convince the insurance company, too, couldn't you? If you would.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they'd go pretty much in my report. But I don't see...
Well, why don't we get this settled and over with? Why don't you be nice, Johnny? And turn in a real good report.
Oh, so that's the pitch.
Well, it's not a pitch. I didn't do it, so why can't you tell them so?
Why don't we get some more answers first to a lot of questions? Explain a few odd angles, maybe.
Like what?
Like the fact that you heard the noise and woke up, that you sent your husband downstairs, that you turned on the light behind him and made him a perfect target for whoever held the gun.
Johnny,
like the fact that you filed your insurance claim less than 24 hours after your husband was killed. Suppose we hear what Shorty Wells has to say before I make any report.
What if Shorty dies without talking?
Well, in that case, I guess you will be in the clear. Because right now, he's the only lead I've got. Now, if you'll excuse me.
Johnny, make that report. Make it now.
Sorry.
I'll give you $10,000 out of the insurance.
Oh, you are anxious, aren't you?
I just want to get it settled. Sit down, Johnny, and let's talk
Johnny.
About it.
Yeah, Joe, what is it?
Fireman I know just came by the hospital, Johnny. They found out why Shorty fired those shots just before he ran out of the blazing house.
Why?
That cellar door was padlocked on the outside. He had to shoot the lock off to get out.
Then he probably didn't set the fire after all. Not if he was locked in the basement. What about that, Marty? Was he the one who was supposed to die in the fire?
If he was hiding out in my cellar, I didn't know anything about it.
Just another one of those odd angles, huh?
Oh, stop it.
Johnny, by the way, what do you want to see me about?
See about? What do you mean?
Well, yeah, the nurse said you phoned the hospital. Said you wanted me to meet you here. You mean you didn't?
Come on, Joe, let's get back there. Sure, that's why she wanted me to meet her there, to get me away from that room. Then somebody phoned and got you away.
Elevator's coming down now, Johnny.
Shorty's the one big threat to whoever's guilty. They know that if he talks, they're tagged. Get up to his room.
No, I thought...
Mr. Sherman, leaving?
Well, yes, somebody phoned. It's the mayor. He wants me to meet him across the street.
Anybody up there with Shorty Wells?
Well, the doctor will be back in a few moments.
Come on, Sherman, back into the...
Wait a minute! Look, I've got to meet Mayor
Start
Lyons.
Start it up, Joe, start
right,
it up.
Sixth floor, number six.
May I ask what's going on here? I haven't got time to go back upstairs. I told you...
I'm afraid
you
you'll have to take time, Mr. Sherman.
It was all right to leave, Dollar. Shorty wasn't showing any signs of coming to.
Did you make sure of that?
Did I... Look, Dollar, I don't get what you're driving.
All right, come on now, let's go.
Would somebody please let me in on this?
Let's take a look at Shorty first, Mr. Sherman.
Johnny, what happened to the cop who was on duty?
Well, he was here in the hall when I left just a moment ago.
Oh, he got to walk down to... Did you leave that door ajar, Mr. Sherman?
Why, no, no, of course not.
Come on, you... but quietly.
What the devil?
Are we interrupting something, Mayor Lyons?
Well,
what's
no,
he doing with that pillow?
Nothing. I wasn't doing a thing.
You were holding it down over Shorty's face. Get out of the way. I think you were trying... Shorty's dead. You smothered him with that pillow.
Oh, no, he was dead when I came in. I was just moving the pillow, Dave.
Did you have to get us all out of this room and then send the police guard away just to move a pillow?
Mr. Dollar, are you suggesting...
Well, I'm suggesting it, for one. Dollar, I've been sure for months that Mia Lyons was back of the rackets here, but I didn't have any way of proving it.
Until now, perhaps?
Until now, Mayor.
Very well, don't move, any of you.
Oh, now, wait a minute. That gun isn't really your answer, Mayor. There are three of us, you know. You can't get us all.
Stay back, Dollar.
Tell me something. Why did you have Ed Blake killed? Wasn't he one of your own boys?
I can tell you why. Now, Ed Blake was going to pull out of the rackets, Dollar, and spill the whole setup to me. That was the reason for that fishing trip.
Then it must have been Marty who tipped off Mayor Lyons.
Sure, it figures. She loved that racket money that Ed was bringing home, and Shorty Wells was in town with a grudge against Ed already. Well, it was real convenient for you, wasn't it, Mayor?
As a matter of fact, Dave, it was very convenient.
Then Shorty hid out in the cellar of Marty's house until she decided things would be less complicated if she locked the cellar door and burned the house down.
Marty was a weak link, you might say. She... Stay back, Dave.
You better give me the gun now, Mayor.
No! Get back!
Do what he says, Mayor. You haven't a chance.
I'm warning you, Dollar, if you try
to... Yeah, I hear you. But I doubt if you can... Let go of it, Mayor. Drop that gun. Let go of it.
No!
Thanks.
No, look out, he's getting away. Lock the door. You'll never stop me. For...
Look out, that window.
You tripped.
That's six floors down.
Yeah.
Well, he got out of being prosecuted.
As a matter of fact, there's nobody left to prosecute.
You want a bet? She was still sitting there in the lunchroom across the street from the hospital. And she'd heard what had happened. I knew it the second Dave and I walked in, from the half smile of triumph on her face, and from the way she greeted me.
Too bad, Johnny. You should have taken my offer because I don't need your help now. Your company is going to have to pay off. I'm really in the clear now.
You are, huh?
And poor Dave, with nobody left to prosecute.
He still has you, Marty. Accomplice to your husband's murder.
Uh-uh, Johnny. Shorty died without talking. Mayor Lyons is dead. No witnesses, no case.
Sorry, Marty. There is a witness.
Oh? Who?
You.
What are you talking about? What's that paper?
Well, you intended it to be an insurance claim. But actually, it's more of a confession. Signed and witnessed.
What?
You were over-anxious, Marty. And you filled it out in complete detail. It says, we found my husband's body at the foot of the stairs.
That's right.
That he'd been shot and killed with his own gun.
Well, it's true, isn't it? That's what happened.
Yeah. But this claim was in the main office of the insurance company less than 24 hours after your husband was killed. The police didn't find out he'd been shot with his own gun until 2 days later. Real neat confession, huh, Marty? Expense account item 12, $310.45. Incidentals in Greensport and transportation back to Hartford. Expense account total, $516.20. End of account, end of report. Remarks? Marty Blake never was able to explain how she knew about that gun. She sure tried. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Now, here's our star to tell you about next week's story.
Before I do that, please let me say thanks to all of you who are so kind about writing and telling us how much you like Johnny Dollar. It's a very gratifying experience. It's encouragement to all of us who are involved in production of the program. And, well, we appreciate your letters more than you know. As always, I'll try to answer you promptly, but sometimes the mail does pile up. In any event, thanks. Thanks very much for writing. Next week, a yacht that wasn't there and a man who wasn't there. They never were. But that's where I found them. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. It is written by Les Crutchfield and produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in this week's cast were Gene Tatum, Paul Dubov, Joseph Kern, Stacey Harris, and Russell Thorson. Musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us on Monday night, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Welcome back. Well, that the only thing I didn't like about the end there was that we had that detail of the confession, but he didn't really catch it until crunch time. Still, I thought it was interesting, and the mayor, as the person involved, I think was definitely a good stroke. You could the only thing that gave it away to me was that the mayor was the only one he didn't question for whatever reason. I also thought the part about where at the end where he thanked people for their letters was really nice, and definitely speaks well for him that he actually personally answered a letter sent to the show. Well, now we do turn to listener comments and feedback, and we have a tweet from Justin who says, how many episodes of Johnny Dollar do you have left of Bob Bailey? Well, we have 12 more weeks we're going to be doing these multi-part stories. And for Bob Bailey himself, we have, after those 12 weeks, 180 episodes, give or take. So we'll be listening to Bob Bailey for at least close to another 4 years. A lot of great programming ahead. Well, now it's time to wrap up the very last Carter Brown case, Kudos for Khan, Part 4.
Carter Brown Mysteries. Adventures in excitement and suspense, based on the best-selling novels by the slick storytelling sensation, Carter Brown.
I had lived up to my reputation. The smart private eye, Joe Kern, the clever character. I'd found the girl I was hired to look for, Helen Duisberg. Daisy and I had come to Duluth, the Mailer's Club, the Arabian Nights. I figured that was where he was hiding Helen, and I was right. But what I hadn't figured on was someone else who was looking for Helen. A smooth guy called Earl Cortez, who appeared in the dressing room with a gun.
Please do not make any trouble, Mr. Kern. For one thing, I should have to shoot you, and for another, we have your girlfriend who is with you at the table, and her safety is dependent on your behavior.
Okay, Cortez. Looks like it's all yours.
It certainly is. Stand quite still, please, Mr. Khan. You are probably carrying a gun, and I would feel safer if it were in my possession. That's better.
Now what?
Now we will wait in the corridor while Mrs. Duisberg here gets dressed. Then we will take a short journey. Please be quick, Mrs. Duisberg. That's right, Mr. Khan. Just stand in front of me while we wait.
Tell me something. How did you find out that Helen was here at the Arabian Nights?
I have my sources of information, Mr. Khan.
Where's your sister, Ines?
You will see her shortly. At the moment, she is taking care of your girlfriend.
Oh?
You don't sound very pleased about that. You are quite right. Inez can be rather unpleasant. Ah, you are ready, Mrs. Duesberg. Splendid. Now, we will go.
Cortez directed us to the back door. There was a car outside with a man at the wheel. Helen and I were piled in, and the car drove to a house on the outskirts of Toulouse. It was a big house, big enough to scream in and not be heard outside, which was bad. Cortez and his man, whose name was Hugo, took us into the living room.
Joe, they got you.
Yeah, I'm afraid they did, Daisy. You all right?
So far.
So far is correct, Mr. Kern.
Well, hello there, Inez. How's your sex appeal making out these days, huh?
I have other weapons when sex appeal fails. Like this.
You know I'd have picked you for a knife artist. There's something sharp about your manner.
I am very good with a knife, Mr. Kern. Good enough to stop your joking forever. Earl, we are all here now, aren't we? Let us get on with it.
There is still one more person to come, Inez.
No, I'm here.
Diane!
Hello, Joe. You look surprised. Oh, but of course, you didn't expect to see me in Duluth, did you?
So that's it. That's how Cortez knew where to find help.
Bad luck, Joe. All's fair, you know.
No wonder you knew Cortez and his sister and all about the way they work. But I don't get it. What's behind it all?
We will leave that part of it for the moment. There are more urgent things to discuss. The money. Who's got it? You, Mrs. Duesberg? Don't make the mistake of trying to keep it from us, my dear. You wouldn't want us to get nasty, would
Lay
you?
Lay off, Herr Cortez. I can tell you who's got the dough I have.
You, Mr. Carr?
Yeah.
Very well, where is it?
Oh, tut, tut. You disappoint me, Earl. Your technique is as crude as Mailer's. That was the way he approached the subject.
Khan, I am not in the mood for fooling.
Let me get at him, Earl. I will make him sing like a canary.
Seeing that my ex-client, Miss Clutterbuck, is batting in your league, it leaves me minus a fee. I'd still like to draw a check for services rendered. Say, 25,000?
Say, five.
25 is only 12.5%. When you remember that I'm holding the money, I figure my fee is moderate.
Inez, I think we can get better terms from Mr. Khan. Would you like to demonstrate your skill on his girlfriend?
It would be a pleasure, Earl. I have several interesting accomplishments with the knife, Mr. Khan.
Hold it. Okay, I'll tell you.
Joe!
They're not kidding, Daisy.
You are a wise man, Mr. Khan. Where is it?
It's in a safe deposit box in the bank. I mailed the key to myself at my office.
Ah, in that case, there is nothing to keep us here in Toulouse any longer. It will take us a day to make the trip back by car, so we will get started at once.
It was a long and uncomfortable car ride. Once we reached the old hometown, Cortez dropped his pal Hugo and me outside my office and then went on. Hugo kept close beside me all the way to the bank and then took charge of the silver box for the $200,000. 20 minutes later, we were in the living room of a mansion where Cortez, Diane, Inez, Helen, and Daisy were waiting.
Ah, you've got it, Hugo. Fine.
Better make sure it's all there, Earl.
My dear Diane, of course. Open the box, Hugo.
Well, it was a roundabout way of finding it, but thanks to you, Joe, found it we have.
Yeah. Just tell me one thing to satisfy my curiosity. What is this dough, and where did it come from?
I am quite happy to enlighten you. It came from England.
What for?
A payoff. Our English friends, represented by Miss Clutterbuck...
Thank you, Mr. Cortez.
...have cooperated with us, and this was our share of the proceeds.
What kind of racket makes this kind of dough in England?
American servicemen. There are quite a lot of them permanently stationed in England. With the help of Miss Clutterbuck's associates, we have established a complete monopoly of the gambling in the camps.
Oh, I see. It figures. And Duesberg must have been one of the servicemen on your payroll, huh?
He is clever, isn't he, Earl?
How come the money was left with him?
I can explain that, Joe. You see, one of our problems was getting our American friend's percentage out of England and into the States. That was where Carl Duesberg was invaluable.
Or so we thought. A serviceman coming home for discharge, the money traveled in his kit bag. He and Mrs. Duesberg got back, he took a job with Glauben Chemicals, and then everybody waited. When word came through to us that the payoff was to be made, Duesberg claimed he hadn't heard.
Figured he could keep the dough for himself, huh?
Yes, Mr. Khan, but he found his mistake.
Didn't you try your persuasive tactics on him, Enos?
You...
Quiet, Enos. To finish the story for you, Khan, we grew tired of waiting. Duisberg suffered an accident. We intended to pick up Mrs. Duisberg, feeling sure she would have the money. As we now know, she didn't. And she realized that nobody would believe her, so she went to Mela. He gave her a job at the Casbah, and while she was there, she told him this story.
And Mela saw a golden opportunity to grab himself 200,000 bucks almost out of the air.
Exactly. He sent Mrs. Duisberg to his club in Duluth while he started looking for the money. And that is where you came into the picture. When our English associates heard about it, they were embarrassed. They sent us someone to help us find the money. Diane.
And with your help, Joe, dear, we found it.
So that's it, huh? I seem to have done a nice job for everybody.
Especially for me, Con.
What? Mela!
Watch them, Hank. Anybody moves and they get lead poisoning. Nice of you to collect the cash for us, Cortez. Saved us a lot of trouble.
How did you know we had it?
I own the Arabian Nights in Duluth, remember? I got word that Mrs. Duisberg there had suddenly disappeared. I put two and two together, and my answer came to $200,000.
You!
Daisy, when the shooting stars, drop to the floor and follow me.
Okay, Joe.
You're all washed up, Cortez. Finished.
Am I?
You and that she-wolf sister of yours.
A she-wolf has teeth.
Boy, she's got a knife.
He knows it now.
On the floor, Daisy. Make for the door.
Joe, you think they saw us crawl out?
I think they were too busy playing targets with each other. Daisy, head up those stairs. See if you can find a phone and call Harding at Homicide. Tell him to get out here fast. Now make it fast, honey. I figure the shooting's nearly over.
All right, Joe, but take care of yourself.
Don't worry. This is one time I'm not playing hero. Let them fight it out for themselves.
Well, so that's the whole story, huh? Brother, what a massacre.
What about Helen Duisberg?
Bullet in the arm, she'll be okay. She was lucky. With all the gunfire, she could have been killed like the rest of them.
Cortez, his sister, that hood of his, Hugo?
The clutterbuck dame, Mailer, and his pal, Hank. Brother, they'll only be standing room at the morgue this week.
Well, I came out of it with a whole hide, for which I'm grateful. But no dough, for which I'm not. You know, I only got $400 from Diane Clutterbuck, and I spent what was left of that on the plane fares to Duluth.
The taxation boys will take care of the $200,000. They'll call it part of Cortez' undeclared income. But you should get 10% for lame information.
Harding, you've brightened my day.
You've brightened mine, Gumshoe. When I tell the chief that Cortez has handed in his ticket, he'll be so pleased he might even smile.
The Homicide boys took statements from Daisy and me and then let us go. Daisy had a kind of predatory look in her eyes, so I made a quick excuse and headed home for my apartment. But I wasn't getting off so easily. Hello?
You think you're getting away from me, Joe Khan? But you'd better think again.
Now, Daisy, I told you...
Oh, no, you can't dodge me anymore. The case is over, you've got no new one, which means you're doing nothing this evening.
Yeah, but I need rest, honey. My nerves are shattered, my brain's tired.
Well, I've got a nice, cozy atmosphere all ready and waiting for you. I'm all primed for rest, relaxation, and romance. I'll expect you at 7.
Oh, but Daisy, honey...
At 7.
Oh, heck... How can I get out of this lot? She's right, I haven't got anything to do. If only I had a new case to start on. Okay, coming. Yeah?
Mr. Khan, private detective.
That's me.
I'm sorry to come to your apartment instead of your office, but it's urgent. I'm in trouble, Mr. Khan. I need help right away. I'm prepared to pay your usual fees if you can start work right now.
Lady, consider me started.
Well, it's like this. I shot my husband exactly 35 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
This is Carter Brown. Well, he wanted a new case to start on. I had to give him one. But I think he should have stuck to Daisy, don't you? Anyway, let's leave Joe Kahn and concentrate on my next book, which I've called Love Me, Lieutenant, about a hard-boiled cop who finds himself framed for murder. So this is Carter Brown saying so long for now. Be seeing you.
In Kudos for Kahn, you heard our star Grant Taylor as Joe Kahn. The Carter Brown Mystery Theater, based on the best-selling novels by Carter Brown, is dramatized and directed by Maurice Travers for Grace Gibson Radio Productions.
Welcome back. Well, our hero. That's all there is to say. This one was okay. It wasn't as good as the last one, but decent. And I do have to announce that I misspoke last week. Last week I said we were not going to have a Wednesday show next week. However, I re-examined, and while we will have a week like that, this isn't it. So actually, we'll be continuing on and introduce you to Manhunt, which was a short syndicated series, and we'll tell you all about it. So Manhunt will be the second half of Fridays starting next week and for the rest of the period where we're doing two shows on Friday. Well, that will actually do it for today. Join us back here on Monday as we start a new Johnny Dollar story. And next Friday, you'll want to be sure and listen for the first episode of Manhunt. In the meantime, send your comments to Box 13 at GreatDetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter or Radio Detectives. And become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.